Well, hi everybody and welcome. I hope you're having a happy Juneteenth. My apologies that this is on a holiday. I was not aware of that back a number of months ago when I scheduled this, so my apologies and I appreciate you being here. Thanks again for all of the questions, the comments, and the feedback that you've given. It helps me to know what kind of things that you're more interested in and to incorporate that into our discussion. Remember also, after our final seminar next week, we'll tack on some time just for discussion at the top of the hour after the seminar is officially over. But for right now, thoughts or questions or things you'd like to talk about briefly before we start? Any remaining questions or ideas or things that you'd like to just develop further, whether right now or adding it to the hopper for incorporation in the discussion?
Hi, David. This is Danny Bedoni. Hi, everybody.
Welcome. How are you, Danny? Welcome from the Big Apple.
Oh, yeah. Very excited and want to say thank you for everything, but getting to the point to be mindful in everybody's time. Change and reinvention, when you say you need some time for this empty space, this empty time, when clients ask how long is that time, I have no idea what to answer. I say, well, what you need, but they're looking for me for a specific answer. How can you guide me on that? Thank you very much.
Well, and that's a great question, and there's no definite answer because it will vary individually. One thing that you might think about is to ask that person when they made a significant transition before, what did they notice, what was optimum for that time for them, because it's a process, and it really can I get a mute your voice and activities being picked up if you would mute.
No, that's not me. That's not me.
Oh, okay. Sorry. That the process will fit into the container of time only retrospectively, but you might get an idea together collaboratively about what they noticed before was a time and what that process was like to see what worked and what they might want to create analogous to that before. Does that begin to answer that for you?
That's the answer I gave them, more or less. Of course, you say it's so much more beautiful. You say it's so much more beautiful. But that's the answer I gave them. But they still look at me a little bit kind of deer eye in the headlights, going like, yes, but what is the time? So they want some idea.
I think they want something else. I think they want to know that whatever it is, it's not a matter of clock time. The clock's invisible. But they want to know that you're going to stick with them. And they want to hear some kind of reassurance about the collaboration and that you're going to do it together. So try out and see how this sounds. You be that person, and I'm going to be you for a second. I'm not sure, but we'll get a better understanding as we go along. And whatever it is, we're going to be aware of it and stick with it and make optimum use of the time for your transition and your success.
I absolutely love that. You got me enrolled.
That always goes back to the framework that we work in as coaches is one of collaboration. So somebody asks you, how long is this whole thing going to take anyhow, this coaching gig? Well, you don't know, but we will continue to assess that as we go along and make a decision together. Always the collaborative framework. You're not doing anything on your own. They're paying you because they're not able to do it on their own. So this is the collaborative process, the we-ness of what they're doing with you, and knowing that you're sticking with them is going to be immensely reassuring. That's the foundation that they internalize as a new model of sticking with themselves and being empathic with themselves.
Fantastic. Thank you. This is a great answer. Thank you so much for guiding us.
Thanks, Danny. That's great. Super. Thanks for bringing that up. It's a really, really good question. Other thoughts, other questions?
I have a question. This is Phil from Atlanta.
Sorry, say your first name again.
Phil.
Oh, yeah, okay. Great. Go ahead.
On grief, like when somebody loses a spouse or a mother or father, and they come to you within 3 months and want to push on, do you feel like that's too soon?
Okay. I'm not sure I understand the question. Who's your client and who's coming to you and what's the question? Would you review that for me again?
Okay, I'm thinking about doing grief, and I know
doing
people
grief
like
work it. With coaching with a client. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir. That,
okay, so actually, you're asking. Go ahead.
And they come to you within 3 months of losing their spouse or mother or father. Do
okay.
you believe too soon to push forward, or should I accept them into the group? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't think it's too soon. I think the next day might not be too soon, depending on the individual. But I would do, here's my preference. I would do an assessment of the person and what they need and what you're going to make as a professional recommendation to them. Now, group coaching is one option, but that's a certain kind of person for a certain issue and a certain goal that they have. They may want or need individual work, so your assessment would determine that. But I don't think there's any requisite time that needs to lapse, because they may be ready to work with you 3 days after a loss, and you get it when it's hot off the press, when it's acute, when you can really make a difference. So welcoming the opportunity to do an assessment and potentially collaborate would be what's in the best interest of this client at this time. And then that would include the recommendation of individual versus group versus other things that you may want to consider or that the client may want or need. Does that answer your question, Bill?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay, absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's why it's important that we do an individual assessment rather than fitting somebody into a program. Because if I'm a client, like any other professional, a doc, an attorney, a financial professional, I want to go and I want to be assessed, and I want a recommendation specific for my needs and what I want to do. I don't want to be fit into one of the Procrustean beds of that professional just because he or she happens to have a group or a program or something that I could fit into. I want something prescriptive for me specifically at this point in time. And I think we make an assessment as any other professional in that way and make a recommendation that's our professional judgment of what would be best for that person at this point. Now, and that may include working with you. It may include a referral to somebody who specializes in some other area that the client may need. So it's a really good question. I'll condense a little bit of this so that if there's another question, I want to hear it. I mean, I'll condense some of what I'm going to say, even though I don't call them edits, I call them amputations. So any other questions from anyone or any other comments at this point before we move into our material? Okay, well, I'll put us on lecture mode so you don't need to worry about the background noise, and I'm hoping we'll have just a bit of time at the end for any comments or questions. Okay, a suggestion here, just listen to this brief overview to see if it makes sense and to see how it fits with what you believe. Much of our behavioral and emotional responses are automatic. Neuroscientists estimate that 90 to 95% of our operating system is unconscious. So that means the vast majority of our responses are based on already established algorithms for behavioral, emotional, attachment patterns. The shadow story operating system on unconscious autopilot. So our lives are filled with these script patterns of how we respond to situations. As we repeat certain patterns, our brain wires these as the default mode. The script we have for each scenario in our lives operates often without conscious thought. At a family meeting or a board gathering, we tend to sit in the same seat each time. We look over the menu, but then order the same thing. The roadmap system now, which is what we're going to talk about in this seminar, is really a macro system of 7 steps to understand the algorithms of behavior, emotion, attachment. It's a strategic way to deconstruct and understand our personally constructed stories and how to systematically write new code for mind, brain, and behavior. Remember, we talked about if you want to really create change, focus on the system. This is a system to understand the stories that we create and understand how we can go about facilitating change. The approaches to changing behavior that work. Consider what this is doing to your personal stories. So the final step facilitates the development of corresponding new and evolving identity to sustain this transformation. So this is why it's not just about asking the right questions, because our clients wouldn't know the answers. Or giving great information is not what's going to change the way that minds and brains operate. So, the roadmap system preface. Remember this with each client. We each have the conviction that we see things as they are, that our beliefs and our responses are determined by objective perceptions. And just given the right information, other rational and reasonable people would reach the same conclusions that we have. Well, guess who said this? Have you ever noticed that anybody driving slower than you is an idiot, and anybody driving faster than you is a maniac? That was George Carlin. He condensed a lot of neuroscience into a little simple sentence. So here's a short list of some anatomical realities in your brain. Facts, beliefs, identity, patterns such as attachment, emotional behavior. Repeat the same thing enough and it hardwires. Change can occur, but it's basically internal, often with an external catalyst of a situation or a collaborator. So whether storylines of money, wellness, career, relationship, or other more specific components such as bias, belief, blind spot, limiting assumptions, here's one system to use. The roadmap is the acronym of the 7 steps. It's 6 steps of change and 1 process of transformation. And here it is in brief overview. recognize that you're creating your own story. Observe, objectify with self-reflection, assessment of the best plan, decision of what to do next, and that includes what not to do, mapping of specific steps, author the new story, the action steps, and then program new identity to revise the operating model of how and who you are. So let's look at these in a little bit more detail. First step, let's use the example here in terms of change and transformation of a career story. If you want to think along with me with this and use a different model or a different focus, just substitute whatever you're thinking about whenever I say career or career story or decision. Step one, recognize your career story. If you were to configure it as a shape, what would it be? A trajectory, a circle, a bell curve, a flat line? Clearly describe your career story as it exists now, then describe what you want in your career story. Many of you have done this already as you've transitioned to professional coaching as a career. If someone wants to make a career change, and this is talking about, let's use the example of a client you have. Are they fully informed about the one they're in now and wanting to leave? For example, if someone's only performed at 80 or 85% of their capacity, concluded that their job or career was not rewarding, then decide to move on, they don't have the information needed to make an informed change. They can't make an informed decision of what it's like to operate at 100% capacity. In other words, to do an apples-to-apples comparison, they would have to function at 100% of their capacity in their current career to contrast it with the anticipation of 100% capacity in a new career. And it's likely that the same process that resulted in a ceiling, say at 80%, would be repeated in the new situation. So here's the question, a question for this. At what percent of your capacity are you functioning in your work now? Now, it's always striking to me, nobody has to think about this. You'd think after enough of these questions, everybody has an answer, 60%, 75%, 80%. They immediately have an answer. It's like they knew I was going to ask that question. So if it's not 100%, have you ever performed at 100%? Of your capacity? Do you know what it's like to be fully successful at your current position so you can make an informed decision? Here's a brief story to illustrate. At the beginning of my career as a psychiatrist, for a small part of my professional time, I served as consultant for the Institute of Rehabilitation and Research, the psychiatric consultant, working with people who had become physically disabled in adolescence or adulthood, often as a result of an accident. Now, not surprisingly, some of these individuals considered suicide as an alternative to a lifetime of disability. So instead of trying to convince them not to kill themselves or treat their depression, I indicated that I could understand their feelings about the overwhelming change in their life. Suicide was at least one way they could control something about their life, especially when fundamental body control was out of reach. I recognized that at that moment in time, the idea of suicide, of being able to control one thing in their lives, to know that they could end the pain, was paradoxically the hope that allowed them to keep living. They needed that choice. I recommended that we work together to achieve that full capacity for them now, recognizing that it would be at a different level since the onset of disability. Only by achieving their full potential at their new level could they make an informed decision about whether they truly wanted to live or not live as a disabled individual. I told them that I would entirely understand if, after achieving full capacity and being able to make an informed decision, that if they decided to die, I would respect that decision. I worked with a few hundred people over a period of 5 years. Thankfully, no one decided to die after going through full physical and emotional rehabilitation and achieving a new and different level of function. Step two, own your career story, especially informed by needs and ideals. Be really clear about needs and ideals, if and how they align with passion and purpose and experience. When your passion and expertise combine, terrific possibilities emerge. So, a question for this. What do you want in your career? And listen for whether the client is getting away from something or going toward something, or rarely both. It may be helpful to distinguish temporary frustration from permanent dissatisfaction. Now, keep in mind that choosing the wrong career may be every bit as easy as it was the first time if you chose the wrong career then. And this is where we can help. One client spoke of a particular storyline that she had bought into. She was not addicted to work itself or to money or the things that money bought, but she was addicted to the pursuit, and this was her assessment, addicted to the pursuit of perfection, to her work ethic. More became a goal, more money, more work. The story of the pursuit of money was simply a way she kept score. It was a substitute for other stories. The ideal of more, of course, lacked an endpoint, so that her self-esteem was never validated. More, perfect, no endpoint. You never get there. She had become exhausted with the perpetual series of occasions for hope of being perfect, yet she had never arrived. Hold on to that. I'll return to her situation in just a moment and develop that a bit more. Step three, assess your career story. Now, as we just talked, a belief and a fact, anatomical realities in the brain, a physical part of a neuronal network. And a teacher simply can't present an explanation and have it overwrite an existing neural network in the student's brain. You can't just list three reasons that an idea is wrong and expect it's going to rearrange somebody's neural networks and pathways. Or expect that presenting a new fact will supplant the one already there. But change can occur. It's a process, not an event. This step is to assess beliefs to see if they're limiting and to try out other beliefs. So these are for you first as a coach, for you, not your client yet. What's another way to look at this? How might your thoughts be limiting you? Who has a different perspective on this? Are there some questions I'm afraid to ask? Remember, denial is a powerful engagement, just like a secret is. What do I really want? What do I need to let go of? So, what is present and what is missing in a current career? What information do you need? Research new information regarding personal skills, abilities, aptitudes. I'll give you an illustration of this in just a moment. So some questions here. What would your career and life be like if you already had what you wanted? What's it costing you personally and financially to not have what you want? So here, distinguish internal dissatisfaction from job dissatisfaction. Internal struggles and unhappiness are often blamed on a job or a marriage, and people want to change some obvious external cause rather than to look internally. Sometimes people even create job-related struggles to externalize unhappiness or conflict in an attempt to escape or to pose a recognizable remedy. Then, the supposed way to get rid of the problem is to leave it, a geographic cure, theoretically. Step four, decide on a plan. Now, a reference here is the needs and ideals exercise in the resource section of the outline. Do it for yourself first. I think it can be very informative about a foundation of internal identity and values. Align needs and ideals with purpose and passion focused on a goal. You decide where you can make the greatest contribution. You want to stay informed and engaged at whatever you do, although it may be different than what you've done for the last three decades. It means that you will examine again your fundamental strengths, your needs, and ideals. Perhaps for the first time, you'll be self-directed, self-organized. No corporate structure or job protocol to fit into and govern your day. Then you'll need to cultivate a deep understanding of yourself, your strengths and your weaknesses, how you learn, how you work with others, and especially where you can make the greatest contribution. Some of you have already experienced this. Your plan for the day, first step, is to look at a blank page, and then you fill that in. Nobody's doing it for you. So, a question to the client. How would working with me help you get to where you want to be? Now, to return to the client pursuing perfection. Her medical practice was booming, yet she was not enjoying it at all or feeling fulfilled, only looking to the next task to do perfectly. I highlighted this pattern that I noticed in our conversation, and it seemed as soon as she began enjoying her work, really immersed in it, then she did something to procrastinate, to put off something, and to look at something that needed to be done. She would put off completing work, which restored her old feeling of dread and a kind of vague guilt about what she should be doing. That process was replacing the good feeling, stopping it in its tracks to restore the old model. When I highlighted this pattern, she recognized it. It prompted her insight. She said, well, work always needed to be work. The minute I began to feel pleasure at work, I began to feel vaguely guilty because I should be working. And she recognized this as a pattern from her earliest memories as a girl. Now, our specialty is change and transition. Our subspecialty is co-creating systems. With a system, you have a map, and each step is a specific, finite, and rewarding experience of effectiveness. Step five, map a new story. When, where, how to begin, smart goals, initiatives, next best action, and navigate with the brain's error detection mechanism. Our brains create patterns of connections in our ongoing search for meaning. These patterns, mental maps, relate to our ability to plan and predict the future. Whenever we do anything that's different from what we have done as a default mode, it registers as this is normal, this is uncomfortable. There's a certain trepidation because the error detection mechanism is warning us to get back in the default mode that doesn't take any energy and repeats the same thing. So we need to be sure that when our client is experiencing this error detection mechanism, this trepidation and uncertainty about doing something new, and every step in the new and the unknown will be attendant with this kind of at least vague discomfort, we need to be able to collaboratively help them recognize and label this experience, to frame it as validation of moving ahead, that is their signal that they're doing something new and different. In other words, it's not their intuition telling them, you got this wrong, you better watch out, or that this is a gut feeling saying they've made the wrong decision. They need to read that correctly and incorporate it in the framework of progress, of opportunity, of challenge. So when our predictions get confirmed repeatedly, patterns become hardwired and automatic, so we notice when something doesn't fit a predicted pattern. Everything that you do with a client that is in the direction of growth is going to be outside the usual predictable pattern. So this can create a mismatch in the expected order of things. The error detection mechanism explains a whole number of dynamic factors. We notice differences more readily than we do confirmation because it's easier to focus on the things we do wrong. At the same time, we struggle to list our strengths. If advice is unfamiliar or unwanted or just doesn't fit with our beliefs or information, it sets off that error detection response, meaning someone can reject an idea before even considering it, placing another barrier to resist change. This is why it probably won't work to give advice or directives or to ghostwrite the client's story, even though it may provide immediate relief for both of you because there's a closure and no further discomfort either way. Focus on problems energizes because it activates the error detection mechanism. That's why problems are the most addictive thing we know as human beings. You put two people together on a patio, provide a glass of Chardonnay for each, and within minutes, they're animated talking about some problem or some challenge. This is something that we need to be aware of, and we need to be ready to reframe as coaches. Well, I have a problem. What's the opportunity here? So the brain's error detection mechanism can be used as part of a powerful internal navigation system. Choice architecture is an art and a science. That's what we do every day. People can be nudged toward decisions that will improve their lives in healthy and wealthy directions. We're susceptible to biases that can lead us to make decisions that are unhealthy, uneconomical, short-sighted. When we consider how people think, we can then collaboratively design environments of choice to make it easier for people to pick better options. And again, as in the illustration with Danny, to do that collaboratively. Step 6, author changes. Put it into action. Implement the plan. Now, someone needs the correct paradigm. Changing careers means changing paradigms. A mistake of extrapolation would be to assume that the present experience would apply to a new career, you just change the setting. Even if you go from head of HR at one mid-sized oil company to another in the same city, the culture is worlds apart. The correct paradigm would be not only the process, but the content of the new career, as well as the system and the process of change. Assumptions within a paradigm need to be examined for correctness. For example, in making, I'll give you a client I happen to know quite well. For example, in making a transition from medical practice to coaching, I assumed getting clients would be similar to getting therapy and analytic patients. For me, that was to share my work and thinking, to present a paper or write a book. My assistant would take the calls, put patients on the schedule or the waiting list. Well, wrong for coaching. Coaching is a profession, but it's also a business. Marketing is a world of difference. My mentor coach drug me kicking and screaming into marketing. So a question here, who else needs to be involved in your plan? And step 7, program new experiences to incorporate them into your identity, a transformation of your operating system of who and how you are. Both the change and transition involves changing a core identity. Now, your identity is the story you tell yourself about yourself, what you're willing to consider, what you'll do, what you won't do. Identity is a set of beliefs that relate to who you are as a person and what you do as well as what you will and won't do. When changes don't last, someone has not changed their identity to incorporate those changes into their operating system of how and who they are. When there is a shift in identity, it becomes permanent. The strongest force in the human psyche is the need to remain consistent with our own identification of ourselves, our identity, not what I do, but who I am. We stay consistent with our own personal definition, whatever it is. So let's look at an example of operating systems. Behavior patterns and belief systems downloaded, especially from parents in the early years of life, become automatic to operate without observation or awareness. And as I mentioned, we know now that 90 to 95% of our behaviors and beliefs are pre-programmed in that automatic operating system. So we may then create two stories simultaneously, and if they go in opposite directions, we get stuck. The surface story, I want to generate more income and create wealth. The shadow story, well, I don't believe I can make really big money. I don't think I have what it takes. Another example, I want to claim my freedom and become my own authority. The unstated part, I don't have total authority because my partner acts like I'm taking it away when I do, so I have to shade that a bit. Mentor coaching requires us to be insightful, reflective, self-observant, to have mindfulness of ourselves in order to be empathically attuned to the mind and experience of a client. Now, again, to the consideration of a career as an illustration of this. Considerations of a career need to be considered in conjunction with the developmental phase of the individual within that career as well as where the individual is in life development. In other words, needs and ideals need to be considered in terms of life phase, the developmental issues more in the foreground of a certain life phase, like young adulthood, may determine how someone views a career, the challenges, the desire to change career. That same view at middle age or beginning of an older age or even nearing retirement, those all are developmental milestones that affect how someone perceives and processes things. So here are some things that we can think about to engineer effectiveness. So let's review some essentials in engineering effective change. And this is in the process of helping a client create a system. Focus specifically on the next step. Here's an illustration of that. Some of you have heard me tell this story before. Terry Fox started the Marathon of Hope, a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. Because he had an artificial leg, his running style was a shuffle and a hop. He managed to average, though, 24 miles a day and completed the run in 143 days. He was interviewed immediately after he finished the race and asked, how did he keep going when he was exhausted and knew he had thousands of miles ahead? His response, I just kept running to the next telephone pole. He had a system. He knew where the telephone poles ended, but he specifically focused on the next step. So, secondly, specify the next step. Not abstract, not global. Some is not a number. Soon is not a time. Act healthier is not a strategy. The next telephone pole is very specific. Three, make changes tangible and concrete. Construct a yardstick, a map, to determine where you are, where you're going, to be able to measure progress along the way and to tell what's detour and distraction. make progress measurable, demystify the journey, a specific destination, a tangible focus on the next step, and make progress visible, small, specific, attainable milestones that are visible, and a celebration of the effectiveness of each small victory. One example, I think it's a great one, of shrinking a task to a tangible next step, Alcoholics Anonymous, challenging its members to one day at a time. It shrinks the change to a manageable, foreseeable, specific action. Nothing abstract about that. A small target, small victories, the cumulative experience of effectiveness and mastery. And with this, all you ever have to do is the next right thing. Now, you may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. So here are AAA principles, a dozen AAA principles to author a transition story. And the three A's, awareness, acceptance, and action. One, you're writing your own story. Is it working? For each component, what are the results? Honestly assess each of these storylines with a question, is it working? And make that a yes or no. Your present wellness story, mind, body, spirit, is it working? Your business career story, is it working? Your relationship story, your money story. A not so secret to success is that you have to pay in full for that success. So you might as well find out what the price is, pay it in full, pay it as soon as possible, and then enjoy the benefits of success. The price is always some form of energy, whether that energy is money, time, work, experience. Another non-secret. People who truly enjoy getting what they want are those who enjoy paying the price. This makes it easier to pay. The price is whatever you need to give in order to generate exactly what you want. I'm doing it right now. I hope you're doing it right now. Two, you're writing your own story. It takes just as much energy to create any belief in your story, positive or negative, based on past, present, future, adaptive, maladaptive, the same energy. The belief of scarcity takes just as much energy as abundance. You generate the energy and give power to your story. Simple math says that when you use your attention to focus on what you don't have, you deplete your energy to engage what you do have. And here's the subtle but crucial distinction. You give specific power to your story, and it assumes a momentum and power of its own. Remember, you're not the subject of that process. You're the creator of it. And here's a short list of some results when you focus on what you don't want. Fear, anxiety, anger, confusion, annoyance, helplessness, guilt. Three, you're writing your own story. Decide specifically what you want. The primary reason people don't get what they want is they're not quite sure what they want. Here's a neuroscience law of attraction question. How does the brain work like a travel agent? First, remember back in the day when there was a travel agent, the first two questions a travel agent asks, where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? So a goal is like MapQuest. You program in where you want to go, make a map, and determine the time. So what you resist, you draw toward you. Resistance is an engagement. Anger is as passionate an attachment as love. If you find yourself resisting change, it's already occurred. And most suffering is the result of resisting what already is. People resist going to the doctor. They aren't afraid of doctors. They're afraid their denial is going to be confronted. Four, you're writing your own story. Do you have specific measurable goals? The prototype, classical study from Harvard began in the mid-1950s. 10 to 15% of the Harvard Business School graduates fashioned a vision and had specific goals for their life and business. 5 decades later, those 10 to 15% had 90% of the assets of the entire group. A similar study of Dartmouth undergraduates, 97%, the 3% had goals. They amassed 97% of the assets of the entire group. It's estimated that less than 10% of people have measurable goals. 100% of people have good ideas, at least some. The difference between a good idea and a goal, measurement and time, where and when, the travel agent questions. Here's a good idea. I want to lose some weight. Here's a goal. I will reach 185 pounds by 5 p.m. August 31st, 2023. Here's a good idea. I want to save some money for retirement. Here's a goal. I will set up an automatic transfer of $300 from my checking to my retirement fund the first day of each month from now on. That's one good decision. Then write a breakthrough goal, something that would stretch you, bring incredible opportunity, move you to a higher level, quantum leap, getting a book on the New York Times bestseller list, spending every March skiing in Steamboat Springs, spending a few weeks in October in a quiet part of the French Quarter in the courtyard writing. But you'll have to set your own goals. Reread your goals, regular and breakthrough, twice a day, when you wake up and when you go to bed. 5, you're writing your own story. Small changes lead to big changes. Issues that seem overwhelmingly large and insurmountable can be approached by looking at the simplicity of the issue to specify a step to make for progress. Divide up your work. Focus on and complete one thing at a time. There's always something you can focus on. Just go to the next telephone pole. 6, you're writing your own story. Be consistent in the pursuit of your goals. For many things, it takes 25 to 30 days to etch a new pathway in your brain to make it permanent. So write your story consistently for it to become the default mode. The difference between a genius idea and a true story of success is not just the 10,000 hours of dedicated work that we once thought it was, but deliberate practice that is informed by performance neuroscience. So guess who said this? It's not that I'm so smart. It's just that I stay with problems longer. That was Albert Einstein. 7, you're writing your own story. The benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what isn't working will become evident and self-perpetuating. Now, good parents have known this for centuries, but sometimes it takes human science and cognitive research to remind us of the obvious. The caveat, you have to take action to diminish pre-programmed responses and to write new script for new experiences. A new story has to replace the old. 8, you're writing your own story. Ask for feedback to your spouse or partner. Ask, on a scale of 1 to 10, rate the quality of our relationship. You can get direct feedback to your employees or colleagues. On a scale of 1 to 10, how am I doing? Then, how can I get to 10? A tribe in southern Africa called the Babemba has an interesting practice. When they hear a story of a person doing something wrong, something that destroys the social net of their tight community, all work in the village halts. The people gather around the offender and one by one recite all that that person has done right in his life. Good deeds, responsible behavior, thoughtful acts. This honest feedback on misbehavior has a time-honored consequence to allow the person to reclaim the better part of himself. He remembers who he is and why he is important to the life of the village. This may have been the original 360-degree feedback. Even without this kind of social network and feedback, we can relax and remember our way back into alignment with our true selves. We can get centered and reconnect with our essence. Now, a sidebar here. you may have noticed that each of these AAA principles of change to author a new money story begins the same, to author a new career story begins the same way. You're writing your own story. That's the first four steps of the roadmap. Recognize, observe, assess, decide. Compressed into the shorthand of awareness and acceptance. The third A, mapping change and authoring new experiences in 12 action steps. 9, you're writing your own story. Get success insurance. Instead of waiting for good luck, a review on research and goal setting helps us understand two essential components: why people give up on goals and how effective goal setting can ensure long-term achievement. Review those six important reasons people give up on goals in the outline, because the inverse is success insurance. 10, you're writing your own story? Take a chance. You didn't have a New York Times bestseller before you sent your manuscript to an agent. If you get rejected, you still don't. So what do you got to lose? What's the problem? You spent your whole life not having a New York Times bestseller. As I was told, go big or go home. A young chiropractor just out of professional school wanted to open a practice in Carmel, California. He was told he'd never make it. There's already one chiropractor for every 8 people who live in Carmel. He went to 12,500 homes, talked to 6,500 people. He asked 3 questions. What location do you think I should open my office, the north or west side of town? Should I have extra office hours between 7 and 9 in the morning or 5 to 7 in the afternoon? And which newspaper should I advertise in? And then he added as he was leaving, when I have an open house party, would you like an invitation? In his first month, he took in $72,500. And in his first year, he netted over $1 million, and that was over 2 decades ago. 11, you're writing your own story. It's never too late to start. Don't let conventional wisdom or limiting assumptions ghostwrite your story. Cliff Bion was a 61-year-old Australian sheep herder. He heard about a cross-country race from Sydney to Melbourne and decided to enter. He showed up in Oshkosh overalls and work boots. The officials looked at him like he was crazy. They said, this is a race of over 800 kilos. The most seasoned runners in the world compete. Do you have any experience or equipment? He said, yeah. I run after my sheep every day, and I got these boots and this baseball cap. So when the race began, the world-class runners took off as they were trained began, and Cliff started shuffling along in his boots. You're supposed to run 18 hours and sleep 6. But nobody told Cliff this, because the other runners, when they were sleeping, he just kept shuffling along. They were asleep and couldn't tell him he wasn't supposed to keep running. So he just shuffled along for a few days. He cut 5.5 hours off the world record. We each have beliefs that limit us. Find the story that will improve you and start believing that. If there were no barriers, what would your ideal life be? And finally, 12, you're writing your own story. Everything is okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end. Ed Lorenz conceptualized chaos theory in the late 1960s in this way. The initial state of events may seem unrelated and random, but eventually a pattern emerges, and in the end, all the pieces fit together. It's the study of phenomena that appear random, but in fact have an element of regularity and predictability, which can be described eventually using a different organizing perspective. In the end, all the pieces fit together. That's what we're listening for while our clients are talking about other things. Now, here's something I'd like you to do. We're still on lecture mode. I want to ask you a question, and I'd like you to write down the first word or phrase that comes to your mind. Not think about it, not write the question down and do it later, but immediately, I'll tell you why, after you do it. Write down your first response to this question. What is your unlived life? So I'm going to take us off of lecture into discussion mode, and if you dare to share any of what your experience or your answer to that, and then I'll explain a bit. We're in discussion mode now. So anybody want to share your answer to that question? What is your unlived life?
Hi, this is Tess. I'm a bit scared too.
Okay, thank you. Well, that's probably why you used a fake name. So go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wrote joyous.
Okay.
Life's always been a struggle for me, and I'm trying to shift into a career that I've this coaching, and it actually would be career coaching because I feel that's where I've got the experience. But yeah, joyous.
I think you're at the right place.
Yeah. Okay.
Congratulations. Anyone else want to share your response? And you don't even have to say your name if you don't want to. Any other responses?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I would say that my answer would be successful.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Any other responses?
Still, freedom to travel.
Okay. Okay, great. Let me tell you a little bit of the backstory and the reason. Whenever there's a response that is immediate to a question like this, it comes from your midbrain and is more emotional. If you stop to think about it, you move that whole process up to your left prefrontal cortex, and it's more logical, conscious, intellectual. But your first immediate response is more emotional and more authentic. Now, I did this question. A buddy of mine and I did a series of retreats at his ranch, alternating it at my ranch for each different one, of people who were within a year of retiring as CEOs or as business owners. So these were significantly successful people who recognized they didn't have a plan for after they retired. They kind of knew that, you know, playing golf every day is going to last a couple of months. So they wanted to look at this whole change and transition process, and we did the retreat. And I had, after the first retreat, it was 2.25 days, I had so many people at the end of the retreat say, of all the things that we did and of all the things that we worked on and workshopped and did interaction, the most powerful experience was the one time you asked that question, what is your unlived life, and had us immediately write down the answer. There were responses that they never expected. These people who were the bastions of success by any parameters would recognize there was an unlived part of their life. I've done a number of white papers converted into a book, White Papers for Coaches, and this is one chapter in Engaging the Ineffable. It's simply called Unlive. Each of the chapters are one word, and it's about this experience. So any other thoughts or questions that you have about anything we talked about or didn't talk about related to this? Or that you want to add or ask? Anyone? Well, we're essentially out of time. Remember, we'll have more time at the end of next seminar to have more of a open discussion, thoughts and ideas. I'm really hoping to get some of your input, your thoughts, and really to develop some things more that you'd be interested in discussing. So have those ready for next time so that we can have more of a discussion. I mean, I recognize this is not a true seminar. I mean, I love actual seminars where there's a back and forth and development of ideas, and I know this is mostly or almost all presentation because there's so many things I want to convey, but I'd like to move more toward a discussion, especially at the end of our next seminar, so that you can have input and we can develop anything you'd like to. So be ready with anything you want to discuss next time. Thanks again for all of your input, the kind words, the things you've sent to me and highlighted about what you want to be sure we cover. I appreciate that very much, and it's very helpful to me to know what's more important to you. So take good care of yourselves. I look forward to picking up right here next time. Thanks very, very much. See you guys.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you. Bye now.